Okay, I'll call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that the time is currently 1:34 PM on Tuesday, March 19th, 2024. Present today, we've got Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Staff, Co-Chair Johnson, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Ortiz, Representative Cologne, and myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, folks can mute their cell phones. Today, we've got two bills to get through this afternoon. First, we'll hear House Bill 19, which is exemptions for boat registration. This bill was heard once last year, so we'll have a reintroduction by the sponsor. We'll take invited and public testimony. We'll set an amendment deadline and then put the bill aside. Then we'll have our first hearing on House Bill 119, which is the marijuana tax bill. We'll hear a presentation from the sponsor, have some invited testimony, and then also set that bill aside as well. So first up is House Bill 19, which is exemptions for boat registrations. Representative Stutes and Donna Page, Ms. Donna Page, if you could please come to the table and put yourselves on the record and reintroduce us to the bill and have at it. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee, for the opportunity to represent House Bill 19. I appreciate that. For the record, my name is Representative Louise Stutes, and I represent District 5, which includes Kodiak, Cordova, Seward, and many small coastal communities. Thank you for the second hearing of House Bill 19, an act relating to the registration of commercial vessels and providing for an effective date. The committee last heard this bill on May 4th last year. House Bill 19 would exempt the owners of active commercial fishing vessels registered with the U.S. Coast Guard from duplicative registration requirements created by the passage of Senate Bill 92, the Derelict Vessel Bill, in 2018. Specifically, this bill removes the requirement for the United States Coast Guard documented vessels with a current Commercial Fishery Entry Commission license to register every 3 years with the Division of Motor Vehicles. Senate Bill 92 aimed to provide the state and local municipalities with a searchable database containing details of vessels and ownership to allow them to locate derelict vessel owners. However, that database exists for commercial fishing vessels in the Commercial Fishing Entry Commission. The database is updated in real time, and operators are required to register yearly. The database is publicly accessible, and the information is provided under perjury, a penalty of perjury. The information includes the legal owner of the vessel and a contact person, if it's not the same person, permanent and mailing address, social security number, phone numbers, date of birth, and email address. Members and the public can find copies of the relevant forms on BASIS. Further, House Bill 19 institutes an annual $8 fee for documented CFEC-registered vessels upon renewal or issuance of a license. This is in lieu of the $24 fee those vessel owners are required to pay to DMV every 3 years. Since the passage of Senate Bill 92, it has not been enforced by the Department of Public Safety to have both stickers, one from the CFEC and one from the DMV. The Department of Public Safety has been very cooperative in working with us and not issuing citations to those commercial fishing vessels that do not have both stickers. However, the Department of Public Safety has been doing this for 4 years, and they have been in touch with us and said that time's up. If this bill does not pass, they will start citing vessels that don't have the duplicative stickers. So that is the intent of this bill, to remove the requirement to have the duplicative stickers. I do need to correct one item from my statement last May. I said that there was an effort to combine the DMV and the CFE databases, but I have learned since that time, under taking such a task as that would be very time consuming and very costly. So that is not the case. Alaska's commercial fishing fleet is the backbone of one of our state's most vital industries. We should not require those vessel owners to register every 3 years with the DMV at an additional expense, only to provide information that the state already has through the CFEC's annual licensing renewal process. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions, and I'm going to turn it over to my chief of staff, Donna.
Good afternoon. Co-chairs and members of the committee, for the record, Donna Fox Page, staff to Representative Stutes. Just in recap, House Bill 19 exempts CFEC licensed vessels from the requirement to register with the DMV while still requiring annual state registration through the CFEC, the Commercial Fishing Entry Commission. This legislation satisfies the original intent of Senate Bill 92, which passed in 2018, without placing additional unnecessary burden on the DMV or on our hardworking commercial fishermen. We have not encountered any opposition to this bill in previous years, and we've worked hard with stakeholders to reach an acceptable fix for this duplicative requirement. With that, thank you for the opportunity to present House Bill 19, and I'm happy to answer any questions. I will note that online we have Tracy Welch from UFA and Glenn Haight from the CFEC to answer questions for us.
Great. Thank you very much. Would also like to recognize that we're joined earlier by Representative Galvin as well as Representative Edgman. And before we go to questions, maybe I'd like to, we've only got two invited testifiers, and then we'll take public testimony, and then we'll go to questions. So with that, first we're going to go to online Commissioner Glenn Haight with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Mr. Haight, if you could please put yourself on the record and begin your invited testimony.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the House Finance, this is Glenn Haight, one of the commissioners at the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. Thanks for this opportunity. I really don't have much more to add than what Representative Stutes and Ms. Page provided. That's exactly what the bill is intended to do. I would say that it's a pretty simple matter, and I think it'll really help the fleet if this bill is able to move through. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Happy to take questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Next, we'll go over to Ms. Tracy Welch with the UFA Executive Director of the United Fishermen of Alaska. Ms. Welch, if you could also put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Thank you for scheduling today's hearing, and thank you for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Tracy Welch, and I'm calling in today representing United Fishermen of Alaska. United Fishermen of Alaska is a statewide commercial fishing trade association. We represent 36 commercial fishing organizations participating in federal fisheries and state fisheries throughout Alaska. UFA supports House Bill 19. House Bill 19 would remove the need for additional vessel registration with the Department of Motor Vehicles as required by the Derelict Vessel Act, also known as Senate Bill 92, and provide an exemption for documented vessels registering with the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission, thereby eliminating the need for duplicative registration. One of the main objectives Senate Bill 92 set out to accomplish was to create a state-managed database that could be used to determine the ownership of abandoned vessels. As Representative Stutes noted, a database for active vessels already exists and is housed within CFEC. That database is accessible to the public and is searchable and is consistently updated. I renewed our boat's registration with CFEC last weekend and can confirm that in the process, it requires one to certify that their information is up to date and that contact information is current. I would also like to note that vessel registration is not handled similar to renewing your vehicle tabs. The process is not available online and requires an in-person visit to the DMV or that you mail your documents in. As I'm sure many of you are aware, not every community has DMV, especially in remote areas such as Bristol Bay and in smaller coastal communities. Even then, those smaller DMVs are not equipped to handle the volume of boats that will need registration services. When this requirement was first implemented, for those who were trying to comply, there were issues with getting appointments at DMVs in the locations that they existed and there not being enough stickers to go around. Adoption of House Bill 19 will serve the purpose of the Derelict Vessel Act, which is to maintain a record of commercial vessels in a state-managed database while eliminating the need for the duplicative registration and easing burden on commercial fishermen here in Alaska. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm here for any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Ms. Welch. Next, we'll go to public testimony. I'm going to go ahead and open public testimony on House Bill 19. That's exemptions for boat registrations. And just first up, if folks have a pen and paper, if you're watching, you can also submit written testimony to house.finance@akleg.gov. Is there anyone in the room who would like to testify? I don't see anyone. Is there anyone online who would like to testify? Hearing none. Again, if folks would like to submit written testimony, they can do so by writing to house.finance@akleg.gov. And with that, I will go ahead and close public testimony on HB 19. And so we'll go ahead and open it up to questions. Do we have any questions of the committee? Representative Edgman.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. This is a bill that needs to pass this year. It's a common sense bill. It's a bill that should have passed a few years ago. And it's a bill that, in my view, you can look at it from a hardship standpoint, assuming we don't pass it. And I speak with firsthand experience because this not only impacts commercial fishermen greatly in my district, all walks of life in all communities, but it also highlights a very overburdened, even without this issue at hand, a DMV system, Department of a Division of Motor Vehicles. If I were king for the day, this bill would be on the House floor tomorrow. Pass it. Yes. Well, let's just put it this way, that this bill, Mr. Co-Chair and fellow committee members, is about economic development. It's about streamlining government, and it's about just getting on and doing the right thing. So thank you.
Great, thank you. Any further questions, comments? Representative, also I'd like to recognize that we had Representative Cronk join us earlier. I've got Representative Hannon, then Representative Cronk. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster, Co-Chair Foster. I am wondering if Department of Administration is available, because I want to clarify something that's in their fiscal note that I think is an error in their phrasing.
We do have TNR, but I don't see DOA unless they're in the audience.
No, we don't, but if you want to ask us, we can make sure we have a response for you.
Their fiscal note references the bill exempts numbering and registration of any commercial vessel that is certified documentation from the Coast Guard. And I believe that's an error. It's a because there are commercial vessels that are not CFEC, so you're a transporter or a whale washer. You're a commercial vessel documented, registered with the Coast Guard, but you're not a commercial fisheries entries commission. This bill only applies to boats that are both Coast Guard documented and CFEC registered, so commercial fishing boats. And I just want, because during the interim, I had heard from somebody that it was exempting all Coast Guard documented vessels that are commercially operating, and that's incorrect. It's just commercial fishing boats that are also documented, but Coast Guard documented vessels is a much bigger swath of vessels. They would still need to register with DMV.
It sounds like Representative Stutz's office will ensure that there's a...
Right. We would be happy to clarify that at our next hearing.
The other fiscal notes reference both factors in their fiscal notes, that you've got to be a CFEC registered as well as Coast Guard documented. Theirs did not.
Thank you for that catch, Representative Hannon.
Okay. Representative Cronk.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you, Representative Stutz, for bringing this forward. I echo the sentiments of Representative Edgerman. This is a good common sense bill that needs to just get passed. Thank you.
Seeing no further questions or comments, I'll go ahead and set an amendment deadline for next Monday, March 25th at 5 p.m. If you could get your amendments turned into either my staff, Brody Anderson, or the finance clerk, Ms. Helen Phillips, again by the deadline of Monday, March 25th at 5 p.m. So with that, if there are no concluding comments, Representative Stutz.
I just want to thank the committee for their time and hearing this bill. Appreciate it, and I'll look forward to seeing you in another week or so.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, next we'll hear House Bill 119. So very similar bills today, HB 19 and 119, and this one is the marijuana tax bill. And I would like to ask Representative Sumner and his staff, Clark Bickford, to please come to the table, put yourselves on the record, make your opening comments, and begin your presentation. We also have Mr. Cody Rice, staff to the House Majority, and he'll be assisting in the presentation. So when you're ready, you can all put yourselves on the record. And have at it.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, other members of Finance, Co-Chairs of Finance. House Bill 119, since the 2014 legalization of recreational marijuana by Citizen Initiative, the industry has provided new revenue streams for the state and its municipalities. Marijuana has become Alaska's number one agricultural crop. However, after several years of steady growth, the industry has experienced a significant leveling off, due in large part to the state's tax structure, which is the highest in the nation. The structure creates an artificial and immovable floor excise tax and a price bubble that provides the black market with an avenue for competition. House Bill 119 proposes immediate tax rate relief to the Alaska marijuana industry. Governor Dunleavy convened the Advisory Task Force on Recreational Marijuana. The number one recommendation from the task force was an adjustment to the marijuana tax structure. The Alaska Marijuana Control Board voted 4-1 in support of the reduced tax structure proposed in House Bill 119 from $50 per ounce of product to $12.50 per ounce levied on the cultivator. This is a short-term fix to stabilize the industry. AMCO unanimously agreed that a long-term tax solution better places the taxable transaction at the retail level. This sales tax of 6% is proposed to replace cultivation tax over a period of time. While a reduced tax structure will in the short term lower the state's revenue stream, it will also help prevent the decline of the industry, which would ultimately drive tax revenue downward. The change in tax structure will not only stabilize the industry while providing areas for Alaska businesses to grow, but it will also allow the state to capture revenue from value add products, which will increase the tax base. The continued growth and success of this young and emerging industry has promise and hope for the future, and that is the Alaskan way. And Mr. Co-Chair, if you'd allow, I'd turn it over to my staff, Clark Bickford.
Thank you.
Fred, if you could put yourself on the record.
Yeah, for the record, Clark Bickford. I'm Rep. Sumner's Chief of Staff. Good afternoon, House Finance members. A brief history of how this bill came about and how we got to where we are today. Last year, around the same time that session started, Governor Dunleavy formed a task force that consisted partly in cannabis industry experts. The task force issued their top suggestions to the legislature that they felt would help prevent a potential collapse to the legal market and help the cannabis market grow. Currently in the United States, as Rep. Sumner stated, Alaska is the highest taxed legal cannabis market. And because of that, there is a number of legal cannabis companies that experience closure each year due to an unstable tax structure that puts incredible amounts of pressure on these businesses on a month-to-month basis. Today we have Joan Wilson. She's the director of AMCO, and she can speak to the closures and the amount of closures that the state is seeing. The estimated average yearly closure is in recent years between 15 and 20 businesses, and the main contributing factor to that is the tax structure being too high. Cody Rice, staff to the House Majority, he specializes in economic projections, was tasked with this last year to assist us on this issue, and his economic projections have proven to be very helpful in previous committee hearings and some of our members fully grasping the concept of less tax equals more revenue in the long run. Today with us in invited testimony, we have Cody Rice. We also have Brandon Emmett of the Governor's Task Force, Jana Wilson, who's a top lawyer in cannabis law, and she represents the majority of the industry, and also Joan Wilson, Director of AMCO. With the permission of the co-chair, I think Cody Rice could shed some light on his model and come up and do his presentation if that is okay with you.
Mr. Cody Rice, if you'd like to come up and put yourself on the record. Representative Cologne.
Through the chair, I just had a short question, especially for the public. Can you tell me what AMCO stands for?
Mr. Bickford.
One of us. Through the chair to Rep. Cologne. AMCO is the
the Alaska Marijuana Control Board.
Yeah, sorry about that. Thank you.
Thank you. As Representative Sumner. Okay, Mr. Cody Rice, if you could put yourself on the record.
For the record, Cody Rice, staff to the House majority. So with the indulgence of the chair, I'll give you a very brief overview of what I'm going to walk through here. Generally speaking, to reiterate some of the points, cannabis was legalized in the state of Alaska and is now a large business. It's legal in some form in a majority of U.S. states at this point. Alaska has a weight and quality-based tax system, which is quite different from most other states in the U.S., which use a price-based system. This bill would change to a price-based system, which is consistent with the majority of other states that have legal cannabis. By some measures, as Clark and Representative Sumner mentioned, Alaska has some of the highest taxes for cannabis in the nation. Current tax revenues to the state are running nearly $30 million a year and an additional $12 million a year to boroughs and municipalities to tax additionally. That's approaching the level of alcohol tax, and it's approximately a $250 million a year industry in the state of Alaska. However, the tax revenue is declining, and it's declined every year on a weighted average basis. So the tax rate per ounce that we're collecting is actually not the headline tax rate that everyone talks about. So when people talk about cannabis tax, they use the $50 per ounce that is applicable to the highest quality category of bud. The actual realized tax per ounce that the state has recognized has decreased every year for the last seven and is down about 40% over that period of time. And it's continuing a very strong, very clear trend. As a result, last year in April, I made some of these forecasts. I believe last I checked, they were within 3 to 5% of what I forecast. It was a pretty clear, pretty easy to forecast trend. Most of that change you'll see is coming from a change in product mix, and I'll talk about that a little more in depth when we get into the slides. This bill would change from a weight and quality-based tax to a sales tax that's closer to the consumer and, from an economic perspective, less potential for distortion and more potential for value-added businesses. So, again, just to reiterate, cannabis is legal in some form or fashion in a majority of states. At this point, 38 states have legal medical cannabis, and 24 states have legal adult use cannabis. The tax in the state of Alaska is a little unusual. Like I said, it's weight and quality-based, so the $50 per ounce tax that is often referred to is the tax for the highest quality cannabis product, which is referred to often as bud. There's a lower tax rate for lower qualities of cannabis, so $25 for immature CD malformed and $15 for trim. This bill would propose to drop that to a flat tax rate of $12.50 until a sales tax can be implemented, because the Department of Revenue needs some time to stand up a sales tax. Here I've just laid out for the committee what other states do. You can see in the middle on the left-hand chart here how many states have legal cannabis that's price-based tax. Alaska and New Jersey are over on the left with a weight-based tax. Per capita revenue on the right, you can see we're a bit in the middle in terms of what we're generating. This is one way of looking at the tax rate, and you can see Alaska on the top line there. We have the highest tax per ounce under this measure. And here, the slide that was originally up shows the wholesale price of a pound of bud in Colorado is actually less than our tax on a pound alone in the state of Alaska. As a result of the way that the tax is currently structured in the state of Alaska, what we're seeing, like I said in the intro, is a strong declining trend in the weighted average tax per ounce. And because that's a weight-based tax, you may wonder, how is that possible? Well, it's possible because what we're seeing is a dramatic and very clear change in the product mix. And what that means is, you can see in the green line here, that's bud. And you can see it's rolling over and trending downward very strongly. That's the $50 per ounce tax. And then you can see the other two that are up and to the right are trim and CD malformed and mature. And those are trending up and to the right, matching a linear trend at 99% R squared. That's very high goodness of fit. So This demonstrates what I was talking about at the very beginning, the weighted average tax, so how much we're collecting divided by the number of ounces, the average across those three categories, very clearly declining for the last 7 years, and it's declining in a compound average growth rate of around 8-9% per year, and it's accelerated in the last year or two. So I can say to the committee with a strong amount of confidence that I expect that the weighted average tax per ounce that is collected by the state in the absence of a tax change will continue to decline. That has potential implications for the state in terms of general fund revenue, but it also has potential for the state in terms of the revenue share from the cannabis tax that goes to Department of Administration, Department of Health and Social Services, and the Department of Corrections. The state only keeps a quarter of the tax revenue as unrestricted general fund. So this is what I have for the forecast under the status quo. You can see that it bottoms out, tax revenue bottoms out, continues to decline over the next several years, and then it starts to incline. I've had a lot of questions about this chart, and fundamentally the questions tend to revolve around what is the bottoming out, what's causing the pivot from the bottom there. And what is happening is the amount of bud that's being sold essentially bottoms out in the model at zero. It may or may not actually hit zero, but from an economic efficiency standpoint, theory-wise, it should hit zero. I had no basis for setting an arbitrary floor, so I just went with that. And at that point, when the bud volume hits zero, the growth rate of the overall market starts to outstrip the reduction in tax from the change in product mix. So essentially what you're going from is a situation where you're selling the majority of the product as high quality, highest tax category, and that's changing to selling lower quality, lower tax items, similar volume. And as a result, the total tax that you're receiving is decreasing. And at the point when you hit zero for the bud, the total growth in the overall market starts to outpace that change, and that's when you see the steady up and to the right. This slide shows you a potential scenario for what the change in adopting a sales tax might look like. You can see that in the initial term, as you drop the tax to a flat 1250 across all three categories, you do see a reduction in tax for the immediate term until a sales tax can be incorporated, at which point the models that I've produced suggest that this tax could generate more revenue than the status quo over the next 7 years. One of the points that we get asked about a lot is the legal market versus the black market. I took some time to do a little bit of research, and I was able to verify what the industry folks had said about the price and the availability of the black market cannabis products. Very easy for me to find black market cannabis for sale delivered for less than half of the lowest price I could find for legal cannabis for an ounce. So this is a very real threat to the legal market. Additionally, you can see that support generally for cannabis legalization is at an all-time high. That has potential implications for the state of Alaska if there's ever a federal legalization situation, particularly in light of the Colorado graph that I showed. The state's current tax system and current structure for the industry is flat out unsustainable in a federal legalization world. So to summarize, Alaska has had a robust legal cannabis market. Cannabis prices tend to drop over time. You can see that in Colorado, and that has potential implications for the committee to think about. Alaska has very clearly higher than average taxes. By some measures, it's the highest in the nation. The product mix, as I said, is changing, and as a result, the tax revenue is decreasing, and the weighted tax per ounce is decreasing very strongly. Black market options are widely available and easy to access and considerably cheaper than the legal market. So as a result, this proposed committee substitute has the potential to raise more money than the status quo. I'm happy to take any questions.
Let's see. I think there could be a lot of really good questions. And I'm going to take, I think Representative Tomaszewski said he's just got a quick one. And then I'd like to take, we've got three folks who are online for invited testimony. I'd like to maybe go to them And then once we get going with the questions, we can kind of keep them going without having to kind of start and stop. So with that, Representative Tomaszewski.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Foster, to the Chair, to Mr. Rice. When you speak about federal legalization and the potential consequences that might have, you're kind of speaking about like Colorado being able to import their product into Alaska, and the way we have it set up now, it would just be cost prohibitive to even compete with Colorado. Is that kind of the process that you're thinking about?
Mr. Rice or Representative Sumner?
Mr. Rice. Chair, Representative Tomaszewski, that's correct. As you can see in the chart here, the tax as it's currently structured in Alaska is, the tax alone is more than the wholesale cost of the pound of cannabis.
So we would basically lose our industry then if that was the case.
I think as is, that's a correct interpretation.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to go to invited testimony, but I did see a couple hands go up in the queue. I had Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin. So when we come back, we'll start in that order. So with that, first up online, we have Brandon Emmett, a member of the Governor's Marijuana Task Force. Mr. Emmett, if you're online, if you could please put yourself on the record and begin with your invited testimony.
Hello. I'm Co-Chair Foster, members of the committee. My name is Brandon Emmett. I am the co-chair of the Governor's Tax Task Force on Recreational Marijuana and Hemp. As you may know, it's a 13-member body convened by the governor to address marijuana and hemp taxes. The bill that you see before you is the product of our recommendations. These recommendations were summarized very well by Mr. Rice's testimony and presentation, so I won't belabor it, but the task force supports this bill. It has many sections that would protect the industry in light of federal legalization and in the face of a robust black market, as you saw in Mr. Rice's slide. I think this is necessary for the sustainability of our industry. And I'm available for any questions.
Great. Thank you very much. Next up, before we go to questions, we'll go to online, we've got Joan Wilson, the Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office. Ms. Wilson, if you can also put yourself on the record.
I can, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon. You stated my name and title, Joan Wilson, Director of the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Office, which is a division within the Department of Commerce. Boy, I have a lot of numbers for you. I just want to let you know, since the last time I testified before House Labor and Commerce, which couldn't have been more than a month ago, six more licensed businesses in Alaska have closed. Currently, there are 471 licensed legal businesses in the state. 231 of those are the current licensees that are subject to tax, the limited and the standard cultivators. We currently have 176 retail stores. When this industry was thriving economically, and we'll talk about what I mean by thriving, it's still a wonderful contributor, there were approximately 1.9 cultivators, licensed cultivators, to every store. Today, there are 1.3 cultivators to every store. I've spoken to a number of licensees. It's a privilege to have the opportunity to speak to Alaskans who are making great contributions to our economy. They're hurting. I think even the most successful of them, who are those that vertically integrate their licenses, are being, and the tax liability is stated to me as the number one reason. To go through closures of businesses, in 2017, one cultivator closed. In 2018, cultivators closed. In 2019, 14 cultivators closed. In 2020, 11. In 2021, 11. In 2022, 20 in 2023, 18. Already 9 have closed in 2024, and I've written accusations against 13 more businesses for failing to pay their taxes, which the Marijuana Control Board realizes this is a burden, but also realizes many licensees are paying their taxes, and it's an unfair advantage to allow businesses to continue that don't. I am no expert on what the right tax rate is. You have those people in the room. But I can say that I believe, as a member of the task force, that this is a high priority, that it's time to fix this now. Legalization is in the future, but one good thing about moving the tax to the retail rate is what will likely survive of our tiers is the retail rate, is the retail store. And this will give you the ability to tax product coming in from out of state once we have nationalization. I'm happy to kind of cut my remarks there. There are a couple of additional things this bill does that I've been in discussions with the bill sponsor about regarding moving to biennial licensing that I think we have to address how it impacts AMCO. But I can save that for another time. And thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Wilson. Lastly, we will go to Jana Wilson, attorney representing cannabis companies throughout the state. Ms. Wilson, if you can put yourself on the record.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Foster, Chair Edgman, and Chair Johnson. And thank you to the committee for allowing me the time to present today and making this a priority during a very busy and vital time of the session. My name is Jana Wilson. I am an attorney who represents many, many marijuana businesses in Alaska. I'm a founding member of the Alaska Marijuana Industry Association, the co-chair of the Alaska Governor's Advisory Task Force. I'm also a board member of the International Cannabis Bar Association. In my practice, this industry faces many challenges, but no challenge is bigger than the inflexible, stagnant price floor that's imposed by the state of Alaska. This tax simply is not workable as it does not flex with the pound price and the value of the market. The current tax structure does not promote a viable, sustainable, long-lasting industry. The industry has created thousands of new direct jobs and also thousands of ancillary jobs and ancillary businesses like my own. This industry is an economic driver for Alaska, but the market has commoditized and is no longer able to sustain an immobile price floor imposed by the current model. This industry already has astronomical challenges and expenses, like not being able to deduct your regular business expenses, not being able to have access to banking, not being able to make wire payments, and having to deliver cash for literally every business payment you need to make, including taxes. These businesses have no access to basic business tools, are heavily regulated, and pay an annual renewal fee to the state of Alaska of $7,600 a year. In my practice alone, in the last 18 months, I've seen 7 to 10 of my own clients close up their businesses. I estimate that's probably about 35 Alaskan jobs. Doing nothing will result in more closures, more layoffs, and a significant drop in collectible tax revenues. Myself, my clients, and many other market participants approached the administration a few years ago and have engaged the legislature in the hopes of forming a working group to address these critical issues. Hence, the task force was formed. We spent countless hours, meetings, and pooled our collective knowledge to analyze the problem, the consequences, and hopefully to create a potential fix, which has materialized in front of you as HB 119. I do want to acknowledge the elephant in the room that you as our elected leaders are faced with difficult budget shortfalls, and this bill, on its face, initially is a short-term revenue reduction. But as Cody Rice has illustrated, ultimately this is an investment in the future, and the tax will become revenue positive again. Additionally, modifying the tax structure now will most certainly halt the closing of businesses and layoffs of cultivation employees. I have had countless companies call me and say, what is the status of HB 119? Because I'll hold on if you tell me there's a hope. And I'm hoping there's a hope. The investment by Alaska into the largest cash crop of our state is not only wise, but it's necessary. Creating a tax model that taxes the actual value of the product versus the sheer weight of the product is logical. We are the only state in the nation that has a marijuana tax base based solely on weight. We need to respond to the changing market, the maturing of our industry, and if we do nothing, this industry will crumble, and all of the economic progress and growth will deteriorate. And although there may be some of you who may not support the legalized marijuana, by destroying the legal market that the hardworking Alaskans have invested their entire life savings in, this will only reroute the demand for marijuana from the legal market to the illicit market, where nothing is taxed, nothing is age-gated, and nothing is tested. Thank you for your time, your service to our state, and your leadership, and I'm available for questions. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We'll go ahead and move over to questions. And again, in the queue, I had Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin. So first, and then Representative Ortiz. So we'll first go to Representative Josephson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, it's Ms. Walton, correct, counsel?
Welton?
Yes, Ms.
Welton. You said that a renewal fee is $7,600 a year. Did I hear that correctly?
That is correct. For a standard cultivation license, it's $7,600 a year.
Follow up. What percent of the total state take does that constitute?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. It's not one that I have the answer to. It's not included in the tax dollar figures that you saw in front of you today. It's in addition to those tax monies. So I do not know the answer. I can try to work with the Department of Revenue and get back to you.
This is really for the panel. Through the chair, I guess Mr. Rice, is it? You talked about a change in the mix. Does that mean that the consumer is buying a poorer grade? Or I thought I heard in your meetings in Anchorage last interim that people are not – there's some fudging going on about what they're selling or something.
Mr. Rice?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, that is a very sharp question, and I think the short answer is it's very difficult in regulations to define the different qualities of cannabis product. And as a result, what you're seeing is a rational response to the economic incentives to label your products in the most advantageous and legally defensible way. And what you're seeing is a very clear trend of doing exactly that.
Another question.
Hello.
For the director, through the chair, Ms. Wilson, how many of the 176 retailers are in my hometown of Anchorage? And I'm asking because my understanding is there's no legal limit on them unless the municipality has imposed one. And I'm wondering if that's a factor in the success of the retailers.
Ms. Wilson?
Mr. Chair, I received the note that my line was unmuted and it blocked out the key part of the representative's question. So if I could please ask him to repeat it. I think I understand, but I want to answer the question asked.
Representative Josephson?
Sure. Through the chair, Ms. Wilson, how many of the 176 retailers are in the municipality of Anchorage? And then secondarily, is closures, given that it's an integrated market, are the closures related to the abundance of retail stores?
I don't have that number for you of the 176, how many are in Anchorage. I live in Anchorage, and I can tell you I believe we have a lot of stores. I'd be happy to try to gather that information while other people are testifying. Let me be careful here. The number of stores, I don't believe the cultivators are going out of business. I see what you're saying. Are prices dropping because there are too many competitors to purchase the marijuana, so the cultivators have to continually drop their price? There has been a drop in price, and Mr. Emmett's probably the in a working capacity, the best able to explain that to you. But when I speak to the cultivators, they're not concerned to me about competing fairly against their peers. You know, they'll let the market decide what that price might be. But the thing that is staggering for them is that flat tax that doesn't decrease. even if the price drops. And, you know, there was a prior question about, well, is there some kind of fudging? Are we seeing things that is bud being declared trim? And I've seen some what was clearly before taxed as bud come forward as trim. But I see that as Mr. Rice said, people are looking for the most legally defensible means. And I'm not here to fully tell you that it's unlawful because it could fit under that second category. That was a lot of opinion on my part, sir. I hope that answered your question.
Mr. Rice?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I have that data from Alaska taxable on a borough by borough, municipality by municipality basis, so I'm happy to share that with the committee afterwards.
Great, thank you. We've got a couple more additions to the queue here. We've got Representative Hannon first, then Galvin, Ortiz, Colombe, and Stapp. So with that, we'll go to Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I'm going to start, Mr. Rice, you prepared the slides in the slide deck?
Through the chair, that's correct, Representative Hannon.
So there's one that is, they're not page numbered, marijuana tax revenue forecast. And it shows, if I'm reading this correctly, so starting in FY23, you've shown us the new tax forecast, and then it bottomed out in FY24. But that's not correct, right? We in FY23 we still had the tax. FY24, the bill looks to suspend it or shift, however we want to phrase it, starting in FY25, and then it shows it rebounding and revenue positive starting in FY26 on your slides, but if we move it out 2 years, so FY28, let's say. But none of the fiscal notes show that. We show no economic return on those fiscal notes. So I'm looking to match your revenue forecasting, because my only concern with this is the loss of revenue to the dedicated streams that we imposed at the initial tax, which is not really the tax burden, but or the industry burden. It's sort of separate from that, but it's where my focus of concerns lie, and your data doesn't seem to match what you've said. So help me understand that. When will we be tax positive, and where do I need to move this forecasting out to?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, this bill was originally proposed last year when I created the models. The fact of the matter is, the trajectory doesn't change if you push it out 6 months, 12 months, et cetera. The starting point changes, but everything else is essentially the same. I have had meetings with recipients of the grants to talk to them about this and walk them through the models and the assumptions. So I'm very well aware of where the revenues go and what the potential is and how important that is to folks.
Through Chair Foster, but it doesn't answer my question because none of the department fiscal notes reflect any tax positive revenue over the course of 5 fiscal years. The graph seems to indicate that in 3.
Mr. Rice?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, I can't speak to the assumptions that are made in the fiscal notes that I've seen, but the modeling that I've seen for those fiscal notes is considerably less sophisticated and doesn't match history, frankly. You can see factually that the weighted average tax per ounce is decreasing, that our actual tax receipts are decreasing. In the absence of change to the tax, I'm highly confident that that will continue, period.
The tax directors.
Would we like to go to the tax director? Do you have any comments? And that was who again? That is?
Acting tax director is Brandon Spanos, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Brandon Spanos, I don't think he's online, though, unless he's in the room. I don't see him. So with that, we might have to come back to this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, the essence of it is the model shows one thing, the fiscal notes show another, the model is off on dates, and so I'm looking to make sure that we're using accurate data to make a decision.
Either Representative Sumner's office or my office will reach out and see if we can get a response on that. Okay, we do have another person in the queue here. And next up, we've got Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Through the chair, I think this is a question for the panel in general. So I think I'm following you that we're looking at, with this bill, moving the tax from the grower or cultivator to the consumer. And I guess my question is, first of all, had there been consideration of moving, instead of it being a flat tax, of making it to the cultivator, that is, of, so instead of switching it over to the consumer, which requires an entire sales tax regime, had there been consideration of, instead of it being a flat tax per ounce, making it something that was more changeable with, or let's say, a percent of the price?
Through the co-chair of finance to Representative Galvin, that is what we're doing. So we're doing a transition. So from the $50 an ounce top line price for bud, we're essentially dropping all that to $12.50 for a period of time as we transition into a 6% retail tax as proposed in the bill. And one of the issues that would be involved in immediately transitioning from a $50 per ounce tax to a 6% tax is that you would have some amount of product that would be double taxed. So you'd have a definite economic distortion for some period of time in that transition period. So you do want to probably drop that in the transition period.
Follow-up? So the $12.50 is still per ounce. It's not per whatever they are able to sell it to the retail stores for, correct?
Mr. Rice?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, that's correct. The $12.50 is keeping that tax, its structure that it is now, but simply dropping it to a single flat tax rate for the period until a sales tax can be.
So again, my question really was more related to, I know we're shifting it to a percentage of the sales for the consumer to pay in time. And my question was, if we had considered a percentage of the sales to the retail folks. Right now what we're doing is we're making that a flat $12.50. So it will, again, we're kind of fussing with the market, in my opinion, because we don't know how the market's going to be. But if we were to say, okay, it's just going to be a flat rate of X percent as opposed to $12.50, that was my first question around that.
Representative Sumner?
Chair, if I understand your question correctly, you're asking if we should have a wholesale tax to the retailers rather than a retail tax. I would say probably not, because the retail tax is going to allow us to capture a lot of value add. So there are, and I'm no expert in marijuana, or, you know, I don't partake, but I think there's a number of products that are available, and I think vape products and this and that, and things that you know, THC is used in, that you could potentially be capturing value add from, you know, some percentage of the manufacturing process would be the captured for revenue.
Follow up, if I may.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. So I can appreciate, I know that in general, it's rare to be taxing growers, farmers, for example. That's pretty rare. In fact, we've, I think as a state and as a nation, typically avoided that. And so I can appreciate why we may move to retail. That being said, and that was my other question, was if you could describe, because it says here in the sponsor statement, it will also allow us to capture revenue from value-add products, which will, I think the implication is, increase the tax base. So I appreciate that, and I was hoping to hear more about that, if I may, please, Chair Foster.
Representative Sumner.
Mr. Co-Chair, if I could, to Representative Galvin. One other thing to consider is that we also do want to discourage the black market, right? So Part of that is to not tax the producer because we don't want to discourage products from entering into the legal market. I would believe, and I don't know that we have a lot of data to prove this, but a lot of the cultivators that are closing may not be, in fact, closing their operation down. They may just simply be exiting the legal market and entering the black market. So that we don't want to encourage. And so if at the point of production, you can encourage as much of that product as possible to enter to the legal market, and I think that would have a substantial advantage as well as far as applying the testing and all those standards and actually capturing the tax revenue.
One last follow-up.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. This would probably to be to Mr. Rice. In your comparative work of other states and what they've done with their tax structure, I see that you had put Alaska pretty much over on the side there with just New Jersey, if I remember correctly. And all of these other ones are based on price. So my question on the price piece, and this is taking me back to, are we taxing the cultivator or are we taxing the consumer at the retail store? When we look at these 11 states, what are they doing?
Mr. Rice.
Cody Rice, staff to House Majority. Through the chair, Representative Galvin, the majority of the states with legal adult use cannabis that I'm aware of tax as close to the consumer as possible, similar to this with a sales tax mechanism. There's a variety of different nuances to that. I believe off the top of my head that New Jersey has a weight-based system, but maybe also a potency adder. So there's small nuances around this, but generally speaking, the price-based taxes are similar to what's proposed here as a sales tax for the consumer.
I apologize. This will be a last one.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. Chair Foster. So through the chair again to Mr. Rice, with your understanding and studying of the other states and in their implementation of a new tax, I always think of a tax being hurtful to the market or potentially will push people away. And this may be for the first time, I don't, you know, at the cash registers, they're hearing tax. And I know that we've been avoiding that, it seems like, with other products. E-cigarettes comes to mind, that's a whole nother topic, but boy, I'd hate to lose revenue there. But anyhow, in this case, are you concerned about the behavior and people going to the black market, so to speak, when they hear about taxes at the register?
Mr. Bickford. Yeah, Clark Bickford, staff to Rep. Sumner. I think that the tax is being dropped is the main point. And so I think if anyone was concerned about a tax when they were going to the store, they would be comfortable in knowing that they're paying a lower tax than they had been prior. And so it is a drop in tax.
Mr. Rice?
The indulgence of the chair, Cody Rice, staff to the House Majority. Just to add on to what Mr. Bickford said, in response to a member from Fairbanks in a previous committee had asked me to add an assumption for price elasticity of demand, which goes exactly to what you're asking, which is if you're dropping the tax, what portion of that is likely to be shared by either the industry or the end users in terms of savings, and then therefore, what is the response of the end user likely to be? I did a survey of the academic literature, took an average of the price elasticity of demand and applied it to the model, and the assumption that I used was that approximately 30% of the tax reduction savings flow through to the end use consumer. I think that's probably conservative given how competitive we've heard the market is, but I'm trying to be transparent and conservative in the assumptions that I use. And as a result, the uplift that you would expect to see based on the literature is around a 17% increase in the market, right? And that may come in terms of increased consumption, but it also may come in market share from the black market.
Representative Sumner.
Right. Thank you, through the chair, Representative Sumner. And I do want to stress that last part there. It's not that we're necessarily pushing up marijuana consumption here, but we are disrupting black market. I mean, there's a clear competition between those two. And I don't want to say that we're going to be encouraging marijuana consumption, but I think it would be discouragement to the black market. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, next up I have Representative Ortiz, Colom, and Johnson. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. And before I start with my questions, I want to circle back to the concerns raised by Representative Hannon, because I'm, you know, I was going to bring up the question as well. We're looking at the marijuana tax forecast, which talks about growing revenues, you know, starting almost immediately here in 2025. And then, you know, continuing rise to 2030. But on the fiscal note, we have changes in revenues that decrease all the way out to 20 and 30. So I think it's really important that we hear from Mr. Spano somewhere along the process here to figure out why there's this difference. And then with that, my questions relate more to you, Mr. Rice, you alluded to meeting with the stakeholders who are currently benefiting from the taxes, for example, youth prevention. Some of these monies that currently come from marijuana taxes go to fund youth prevention, police training funds, et cetera. You mentioned that you met with these groups. Did you basically present that they, in the long run, will even be better off? Is that kind of the presentation that you made with more revenue being available?
Mr. Rice.
Cody Rice, staff to the House Majority. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz. I walked them through the assumptions in the model, shared the actual working model, and offered to answer any questions that I had. About an hour-long meeting on it, and I'm happy to meet with any of your staff to do the same.
Mr. Ortiz, Representative Ortiz.
And thank you for that. And if I may, Mr. Chair, I have this question that came from a constituent. I think it's a good one. And rather than me paraphrase it, I would just like to read the question if I could do that. It says, it took us decades to recognize and begin work on fetal alcohol syndrome disorder. I will bet my career that in 10 more years, we will be trying to figure out how to deal with pot brain babies. We are not... We are hopefully collecting data on this now, as kids in kindergarten and first grade are the first ones since legalization to beginning entering public schools. They say it will be a problem. The science shows degradation of IQ from pot use in a developing brain all the way to age 24. Obviously, you know, I guess my question is more philosophical in nature, in the sense that we're looking at trying to make it a more competitive market out there for marijuana suppliers in the legal market. I understand that. I understand the reason for it. What do you say to that question, particular question that this man asked?
Mr. Rice?
Through the chair, I'm going to let my colleagues address this as well, but I think it's important to reiterate the point that Representative Sumner made, that when I talk about an increase in consumption, I'm talking about an increase in legal consumption. It's highly unlikely that you're going to change the entire consumption in the state of Alaska. In the black market here, by any measure that I've looked at, using analysis from other states, for example, Maryland has a pretty good study that they hired a consultant to do that looked at their tax and also at the black market. And when you apply that to Alaska, the implication is that the black market in Alaska is at least equal in size to the legal market, and by some estimates, as much as two or three times larger. And so what you're talking about here functionally is moving from the black market to the legal market. On the medical side of that, I'll defer just...
Representative Sumner?
Through the chair to Representative Cortez. And I would just like to reiterate that the black market lacks any testing standards and... significant risk of adulterant presence, pesticides, possibly fentanyl, all kinds of nasty things, that if that is a concern of yours, you should be very much in support of this, because certainly there may be medical down the road effects from marijuana, but there certainly are to many of those adulterants and significantly higher risks.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, and I can appreciate that. And again, going back to this constituent of mine and going back to the broader issue, says this industry swore that if we legalized pot, they could do fine with this tax. They said they could do it, so they should. In other words, when this started, the whole program was, yeah, we can do this. Just give us the legalization. We can work with this particular parameters on taxes and things like that. And so obviously the constituent is saying, what happened? Why can't you do it? Because you said you could, not you personally, but the industry.
Through the chair, Representative Cortez, I would say that a bunch of potheads were not economists. And, you know, so we come back and we're attempting to address this. So thank you.
And Mr. Bickford?
Yeah, through the co-chair to Representative Cortez, I think it's also important to note that Alaska was one of the first legal markets, and I think that since then, seeing action in other states and seeing what's happened in Alaska, people are just adjusting what they think is the appropriate tax to protect the industry from crumbling. And so the original tax number certainly was a guess more than anything. And I think now we've seen years of proof that that tax is too high.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much.
Next up, we have Representative Colomb and then Johnson. Representative Colomb.
Thank you. Co-Chair Foster, I think this might be for Representative Sumner, but anybody could chime in. So I'm looking at the explanation of changes, and my questions are around the 6% sales tax. Here it says the sales tax draft 1 says 6% sales tax on retail sales, and then draft 2, 3% sales tax in 2028. And I believe this started with a higher sales tax. So I just wanted to kind of maybe give me a history of why this has gone this way through your committee. I mean, you can give me your opinion, too, but I'm just wondering, did it start higher? It's going lower, just kind of how those changes came to be.
Representative Sumner.
Through the chair to Representative Cologne. So sort of the history. This is Representative Sumner for the record. The history of that was that I believe we started at a 3% sales tax. We moved it to a 10% sales tax, and then it was amended back to a 6% sales tax. And there were a number of reasons that people had for each of those amounts. Certainly, we believe that the 10% sales tax would be strongly revenue positive, but there might be, you know, negative economic impacts to that, and we sort of settled on the 6% sales tax that we believe by our projections will be net revenue positive over the long run. So.
Follow-up?
This might be for Mr. Rice. So the your projections are based on a 6%.
Mr. Rice?
For the record, Cody Rice, staff to the House Majority, through the Chair, Representative Colomb. The current projections are based on 6%, but as I offered before, I'm happy to walk through the working model with any of your offices to run specific scenarios.
So one more follow-up.
Hello?
So if it, I mean, we can walk through that, but if it had stayed at 10, what it originally was, do you think that bounce back would have been, I guess that the bounce back would be higher, or would it happen sooner? Or I guess what do you think the effect would be if it went through as a 10% instead of a 6?
Mr. Rice?
Through the chair, Representative Colomb, I think undoubtedly at a higher tax rate, you would generate more tax revenue. That's slightly offset by the fact that the higher the tax rate, the lower the reduction in price that would flow through to the consumer, and therefore the lower the effect of the price elasticity of demand. So there's slight offsetting of that, but generally speaking, a higher tax rate will raise more revenue.
Follow-up? Yeah, I guess I was trying to get that clarification on how much, you know, you start going too high, now you're starting to affect consumption. So it seems like there's a delicate balance here with the number, because what you guys are telling me for many reasons, if it goes too high, or if it's on the weight, or if it's not structured correctly, you're feeding the black market, right? So if you go too high, maybe the revenues go up, but maybe we start feeding the black market. Would that be a correct assumption?
Representative Sumner?
through the chair to Representative Glomus, Representative Sumner, for the record. That is correct. So we believed that number is essentially the net revenue positive, by our projections, the net revenue positive number over time that will still allow us to erode away that black market. So that was the reason why we came to the 6%.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Representative Co-Chair Johnson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess if I might ask your indulgence, I probably have numerous kind of questions. So through the chair, but just want to start out by saying, remind me, this was done by a voter initiative, isn't that correct? Or
through the chair, that's correct.
Voters initiative, like 2012, maybe?
It was a yes on two through the chair, and I believe it was 2012.
Mr. Bickford, by the way.
Bickford, sorry for the record.
Thank you. So, I mean, it really, thank you, through the chair, then it wasn't really something we established to establish a industry, per se, in Alaska. It was something that was done by voter initiative. And then where the regulation was put in place to try to make sure that we knew that it had, was an intoxicant, and that we wanted to make sure that it didn't have some impact to people. I mean, I guess that's why we would have the taxes. So I will get to the fiscal notes, but let me go ahead and make a couple more statements. I don't know that we were trying to eliminate the black market of cannabis drugs out there by this. It was something that happened by voter initiative. One of the things that's not in the discussion originally, obviously there wasn't funded, but one that has came to me from my local government was, how do we make it so law enforcement can determine how someone's operating under the influence? That's a cost. I don't know how you do it. That's a cost that we don't have and we haven't addressed. Just putting that out there. And then next, I mean, I do want to say thank you we're 10 years out, and so I think that's probably time to see bad business owners start to, people that were maybe the pothead economists, maybe not, maybe that's this is about a good time. It's not 2 years in. 10 years, you're starting to get a sense of what the market's going to do. And I don't know what our increase in legal consumption really is, but I will agree with some of the things that were said, where this is not a surprise to any business owner. If you open your business, you should have you already know what your expenses are going to be. So they didn't seem to have a problem with it before. I do have some concerns about a number of the slides that I had as far as exactly, what the background on some of those are. I mean, I'd have to, and I don't want to, start analyzing and criticizing the slides, but I do have a couple more points, if I might. So I do have a concern about the restorative justice account, and I'd like to know how you see this tax reduction, how that's going to affect the restorative justice account, how much was that account used for marijuana reduction programs or recidivism programs, what they were used for, and how that might affect it, because it looks like it's a significant impact. And also, how much, if you have any idea how much it will cost for public safety to get some kind of testing, or if there has been testing in other states as far as impaired driving. Questions.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Just want to let folks know at our next meeting, we will have both the fiscal note review and also departments before us. But I do see that we have Commissioner for Public Safety here. If he wanted to come up and address the committee on any of these, otherwise we could bring him back at the next meeting. Is there a preference, Commissioner Cockrell, as to whether you'd like to maybe prepare and come back to that? And if, I'm sorry, if you could.
I guess I'd be.
Thank you.
And I'm happy to wait until next week.
Okay. Commissioner Cockrell, if you could just put yourself on the record.
Through the chair, James Cockrell, Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety, and could I have the question again? Please.
Representative Johnson?
Well, what I would like to know if you have if there's a test to determine when someone is operating under the influence of marijuana that you can do. I mean, I know there's some field tests, or if there's something that needs to be developed so for your law enforcement officers to have, you know, some additional tools in their toolbox that may cost money to develop.
Through the chair, and I can't speak to all the police departments in the state, but essentially the Alaska State Troopers are, some of them are trained as DRE, drug recognition experts, which essentially is a very stringent field test that they have to give individuals they believe under the influence of drugs that include marijuana or other drugs. And there's indicators that will indicate if they're what type of drugs they are. It's fairly substantial training. We have to send our troopers out of state. They have to go through and be in the emergency rooms to also do more training. So it's a huge lift for the department. And I will say, based on my reading, other states are still struggling with how they drugs in general, but marijuana, since it is a legal drug in Alaska. So there is some fallbacks and some costs to our department to enforce people under the influence of drugs or alcohol.
Well, Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And through the chair, and then a question for Mr. Cockrell. Do you, has been your experience then that someone that's driving under the influence of marijuana, I mean, if they're impaired, I mean, I'm going to make the statement, that I think they're probably, you know, not wholly there as a driver. So, but I don't know that I got any numbers off the top of my head on what kind of problems there are associated with driving under the influence of marijuana intoxication.
Mr. Clark Pickford, for the record, Representative Sumner's office. And I hope this is not inappropriate, but could I ask the director a question? Going off of the co-chair, Johnson.
Mr. Pickford?
I'm curious if, and I could be completely wrong about this, but does this bill change anything about the way that it would administer testing on if you guys did pull over someone with the suspicion of driving under the influence?
Commissioner Cockrell?
Or is it just the increase of consumption that would be the concern, I guess? I'm trying to understand so I can take notes.
Can I just answer?
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we're not getting off. I want to make sure that for the record, that I'm looking at, I mean, you give us a second opportunity to look at what is the actual cost of society of the marijuana legalization 10 years later. And so obviously a concern was drug use, abuse, you know, addiction, so on. And that's why we have the restorative justice account was set up as part of the taxes. But what I'm trying to get to is how much other cost do we bear by having having marijuana legal? And the one that comes to mind is law enforcement, just because Matsu Borough has it on their priority list to have the state develop some way that they can determine how there's people are operating under the influence. So that's what I'm trying to get to, is just the cost of the legalization, not whether this bill changes the cost or anything to that effect.
Would like to represent Commissioner Cockrell?
Through the chair, James Cockrell, Commissioner, Department of Public Safety. You know, if you look back at the history of the state, you know, we've been a marijuana state since 1976 under the Raven decision. And even though we probably are seeing a larger consumption of marijuana than we have since it's been legal than prior to it being legal, the department, law enforcement in the state has essentially dealt with marijuana for a long time. There's certainly some expertise that has to be applied, and there's additional tests, additional training for law enforcement officers to detect what type of drugs that are in a person's system. I wouldn't say it's a perfect way to measure it, but certainly I'm not even sure where I'm going with this question. But I would say, back to the one question, is I don't see this bill changing what we're already doing as a state. I think that was part of the question that was brought up. And I can certainly probably get an expert from our department if you want to talk further in the effects of marijuana and other drugs that are affecting our citizens and also our drivers on our streets.
Mr. Rice, and then Representative, or actually let's go to Representative Sumner first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and through the chair to Chair Johnson. I think I understand your question. I also saw the resolution from Matson Borough Assembly. I do believe that there should be some work done around the detection of intoxication by marijuana in drivers. I don't believe this is the proper vehicle for that, because this is addressing tax statutes, and that would be more of a criminal law, sort of a separate issue. And I think there would have to be a lot of work done on that. So I don't really believe that should be a separate bill, because of the amount of work done with blood testing and all the specific requirements that would be involved in something like that. I really think that should run as an independent piece. Thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. You know, and I appreciate what you're saying, but in back of my head, I might have an amendment rolling around, so that where the amendments are things that sometimes when you find a proper title, you put things in there. So I'm just trying to get to the question. My question was, is there another cost, basically another cost to society for that marijuana legalization has had that we might want to address? And if it's costing us money when we're reducing the amount of tax that we're receiving, but yet we have, more expense. That was the gist of my question. So I don't feel like my questions are out of line. I think this is just one avenue to investigate them.
And before I move on to the next question, if anyone else wanted to touch on this subject, Mr. Rice.
Cody Rice, staff to the House Majority. Just one small point of clarification, because I didn't mention it in my original testimony. The way that the revenue currently flows is that only about a quarter of this tax revenue is actually unrestricted general fund. 50% of it goes to the recidivism reduction fund in the Department of Administration. 25% goes to the marijuana education and treatment fund, of which 50% may go to youth services grants administered by the Department of Administration and the Department of Health and Social Services.
Okay. I know that Representative Colom and Representative Ortiz had their hands up, but was it a separate question or was it on this subject? Separate.
Related.
A little bit related. Maybe we'll treat that as a separate question. Sounded like that was, we're going to try to, we'll stick with that. Representative Johnson, you're still up. Do you have more questions?
I think I'm all done for now. Thanks for asking.
Okay, great. Thank you. Okay, so next, let's go over to Representative Colom and Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Chair. So this doesn't regard public safety. It kind of does.
Yeah, new question's fine. Thanks.
I mean, whoever can answer, probably Rep. Sumner. So we're talking about the cost to society. That, in my opinion, that debate has long come and gone. The decision's been made. So now we have these costs. But what I just want to make sure I'm understanding. The bill is coming out of the idea that the tax revenue is going down, and it's projected to go down. And this is trying to change that. Right, so we get more revenue. Now, whether the fiscal notes come through, whatever, all that is hashed out between the projections, is it the fact that the taxes as a stand are down and projected to go down?
Mr. Representative Sumner?
Without the bill.
Through the chair, yes, the tax revenue has been. Rice run through that again, but it is the actual statement that the tax revenue has been declining, in part because of product mix switch, and in part, I believe, because of black market Sorry. yes, revenue has been trending downwards, I think in part because of product mix switch, and I believe partly because of black market switching. So,
yes.
And we could have Mr. Reitz go through that again if you
like. Can I have a follow-up?
Follow-up.
I understand what Mr. Reitz did. I think what I'm just trying to make the point that if this bill is proposing us a tax change, it may help this problem or may not, but the fact is that the revenue is going down. So something has to get changed. And so if we have a cost to public safety and we have the recidivism fund and these pieces that use the money, I want to make sure I understood that it's not like the revenue's just soaring through the sky and we want to lower the taxes. My understanding is that we're seeing a decline. We're seeing more into the black market, and this bill is trying to fix that. Would you say that's true?
Mr. Rice?
For the record, Cody Rice, staff to the House Majority, through the chair, Representative Cullum, that's correct. This is a fiscal year, full year model, but the most recent data that I've seen on a monthly basis from Department of Revenue matched the projections within a couple percent. As I said before, the modeling was quite easy. It fit a linear model really well.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, Representative Ortiz and then Hannon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. Question for Commissioner Cockrell. Not in the way that public safety officers do their work, but on the broader picture of public safety for Alaskans, would you say that this bill is neutral in relationship to having any impact on the public safety out there for Alaskans? Let's put it that way.
Commissioner?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I would say this would be neutral.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Through the co-chair, and with no disrespect to Mr. Rice, I would like to see the revenue data collection from revenue, because the chart you provided us uses a tax forecast and then a revenue forecast showing a decline. So I'm looking to see that downward trend, because I'm focusing on the revenue elements, and I'm not doubting it, but I don't see it in any data provided by them to us. And then, again, that gap of how long before we see us in a net positive situation. So I know you said that these were prepared for 18 months ago when this bill started. So I'm looking for fiscal year 23 and 24 data from revenue of what we actually did collect and when we would predict under a new revenue forecast it to come back up.
And we'll make sure that revenue and tax both have some input and can address this at the next meeting. Any comments on that, Mr. Rice?
Cody Rice, staff to the House Majority, for the record, through the chair, Representative Hannon, I think that's a fair question. And the actuals as of through December of 2023 from Department of Revenue are actually in the model, and I'm happy to walk through that with your office. It does match to the full year forecast that I have for FY24.
Okay, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, Mr. Rice, what is the average sales tax in the 11 sister states that base it on price?
Mr. Rice.
Through the chair, Representative Josephson, I don't know that off the top of my head. I can take a look and meet with you or your staff afterwards. There's a wide range.
And maybe if we can get that for our next meeting, something in writing also. Representative Josephson?
It just strikes me, I'm concerned about the lost revenue, something highlighted by my colleague from Juneau, and it stays there into the end of the current decade. It just strikes me that I understand the merits of the retail argument. Get that. I'm just wondering whether the rate should be higher so that we don't forego this revenue that we've become accustomed to. And I don't know if you want to, I understand that then you get into black market problems and all the rest. I get that, but is there something more than that is concerned? We're still going to have consumers, right?
Mr. Rice or Representative Sumner first?
Through the chair to Representative Josephson, I think that the rate is a policy call for the Finance Committee, certainly. We feel pretty strongly that at a 6% rate, it would be revenue positive, and I believe that those black market considerations are very real. So I would ask the Finance Committee to also consider those. But yeah.
Okay. Okay. I don't see any further questions of the committee. And Representative Sumner, do you have any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, no. Thank you for the bill presentation.
Great. Thank you very much for your presentation. So we will come back to this. As I mentioned, we'll have the departments as well as fiscal notes at the next meeting for this bill, which is HB 119. Our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is tomorrow, Wednesday, March 20th at 1:30 p.m. And at that meeting, we'll hear House Bill 144, that is Repeal Education Tax Credit Sunsets. And I believe that is the renewal of that tax credit or of the sunset. And then we'll also have for us Senate Bill 22, which is Juneteenth Day. So with that, we will be adjourned at 3:05 p.m. Thank you.